Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to Bits About Books. Our guest today is Christy K. Jones, and we speak with her about her bestseller, Selling Your Way In, the playbook for setting your income and owning your life.
I want people to use a career in sales to make the kind of money they want, have the kind of lifestyle they want, have the success that they want. And unlike other professions, I say there are jobs with a set income and jobs where you get to set your own income. And sales is one of those professions where you get to determine your income.
Christy Jones is the author of Selling Your Way In. Companies hire Christy to elevate their sales organization because most sales leaders and professionals feel discouraged and frustrated about anemic pipelines, low close rates, and missed targets. Audiences find Christy's presentations engaging and packed with passion, energy, and valuable insights. Now, onto this insight-filled episode with Christy Jones. Christy, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm so happy to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be able to talk about my new book.
Wonderful. Talking about writing a book, it is never an easy process, no matter how it seems. When did you think that you need to write this book?
In 2019, I was walking to lunch with a friend of mine. We're part of a group called the Women Sales Pros, so female sales consultants across the United States. Her name is Barbara Weaver Smith. Mm-hmm. And as we were walking during a conference we were at together, I'd just come off of a session about authors and people who had written books and then speaking. And so she said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, I thought it was really interesting, but I really have no interest in writing a book." And she said, "Okay, well, what do you have interest in?" And I said, "I'd like to be a speaker." And she said, "Well, then you're going to have to write a book." And I got a little frustrated. And I said to her, "Well, I got stuff to say, and I don't know why I have to write a book to say it. Like, you know, I got important things people need to hear." And she said, "Well, if you can't check that author box, it's going to be harder for you to be a speaker." So fast forward to 2020, where the pandemic happened, and a company called Udemy that has e-learning content approached me. They were getting ready to build out their sales catalog and their B2B side of the house and asked me to create a prospecting course. So I created a two-hour prospecting course called the Prospecting Fundamentals. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just turn that into a book. So in about 2022, I reached out to a book coach here in St. Louis, that's where I live, Dixie Gillespie, and said, "Hey, I think I want to write a book, and I think I have all the material, so this shouldn't take long. This will be super easy, you know, quick process for you." And about 2 months into writing it, I told her I needed to take a 30-day sabbatical. So I did, and I came back to her and I said, "I don't like the book we're writing. I think it's boring. I think there's lots of people, you know, who have written books about this topic, Jeb Blunt being one of them, Fanatical Prospecting, right?" And I said, "There are people out there I think are better subject matter experts at this topic, and this is not, like, I'm bored. I'm not engaged with this. So, like, we need to pivot." And so she said, "What do you want to write about?" And I said, "You know, as a consultant, I walk into companies all the time, and I think the majority of sales professionals are in the wrong seat on the bus. They are on maybe the right bus, maybe they're with the right company, but they may be choosing the wrong sales role. And I think in our industry, there are so many sales roles out there, from B2C, 100% commission, you know, base plus commission, selling a service, selling a product, inside sales, outside sales. I don't think anybody really knows what exactly their sweet spot is. Like, you know, I don't think anybody's out there teaching sales professionals how to identify their sales superpowers, their sales secret weapons. And then once you've identified those, how to put yourself in the right company, selling the right product or service in the right industry with the right sales leader. And so I decided I wanted to write a book about that.
That's wonderful. I mean, it's a very interesting journey. It's, I mean, so many times when I'm talking to authors, they're like, okay, I knew this all already, or I have been writing a series of blogs. I already had the material. It is all coherent. All I had to do was chapterize it and boom, I had the book. This is a very, very interesting, journey that you have had. So Christy, what happened after that? So you speak to her and you say, look, I need to pivot and I need to do this. Then what happened?
Yeah, the first thing she had me do over the first 3 or 4 weeks was just write stories. Hmm. She said, write interesting sales stories of sales professionals that you've worked with, of, you know, owners or founders or sales leaders you've worked with. So she made me collect, you know, I mean, do the storytelling part first, you know, so we could have anecdotes. So she had me write all of these stories from, you know, 20 years as a sales leader. So that was actually a very fun part.
Hmm. And then what? So you had this bunch of stories. Yep. They were not necessarily linked or coherent, or they don't necessarily follow, one follows the other.
So then we took those stories and we decided what were the topics, right? You know, what was the story telling us? What was the lesson that needed to be learned? What was the topic? And so we didn't actually like put an outline together. We didn't do chapters in order. Hmm. We just started writing chapters,
right,
that we thought would be relevant to individuals. And then it did sort of start to form. Hmm. And then we were able to say, okay, I think here are the three sections of the book that might need to be written. And then what are the topics within those sections? And then we went back to make sure I had stories for all of those. And so over time, it really did get to be more organized. But initially, it was sort of haphazard. And just she let me kind of write the things I wanted to write that I was really passionate about.
Yeah.
And then it started to come into some sort of a format and some organization.
This sounds so good, because I remember when I was young and I read this piece in Reader's Digest, if you remember that magazine, Reader's Digest. Do you remember?
Yes. Oh yeah, sure. I'm old enough.
Yeah, we all are, aren't we? So there they said, if you want to write an autobiography, typically people start writing it chronologically, then they get stuck because they can't remember what they did when they were 6 years old. Instead, write highlights of your life, and then. It's when you're telling me the story, I'm remembering that.
Yep.
That this is such a wonderful way to actually put it together, because you know what you want to write, and you don't. If you get stuck in the structuring in the beginning, then
I don't think that would have worked for me. Although I am a very structured and organized person, mm-hmm. I think I would have felt a little pigeonholed.
Right.
And I think let her the freedom to kind of talk about topics that I was passionate about that I thought were super important first. And then build other material around it, I think worked really well for me.
Wonderful. So now you have written the stories, you have identified the topics, you have structured it. Some of the topics didn't have stories, so you went back and wrote those stories. And now you have sort of the structure and the stories, everything lined up. And that's...
Yeah, I think we got towards the end. And as I read it from start to finish, I felt like there were some things missing. So I think we inserted two additional chapters. Hmm. Some at the bottom, I had started to talk about what this concept I call the work to get to the top doesn't happen at work.
Right.
And although it had been sprinkled throughout the book, it wasn't a very dedicated chapter to it. So I told her, I said, I think I need a dedicated chapter of this towards the bottom, you know, towards the end of the book. Right. So we, you know, and she was editing along the way. So she's a great book coach because she does the motivation, the helps with the structure, but also edit. So as I was moving forward, we were editing the book behind me before getting it to a professional proofreader.
You have a workbook, which is right at the beginning of the book, and you ask people to download the workbook. When did you think that it's necessary to include one, and what was the process of actually building that?
Yeah, I think towards the end, I realized that this was going to be, I'm calling it a professional development book for sales professionals, And as a result of that, I knew people were going to have to be thoughtful about making some decisions. So at the beginning of the book, they were going to have to make decisions that then we were going to need to use that information later in the book.
Yeah.
And that's, it was towards the end. I didn't do the workbook until, I don't know, like everything was almost done. And the, you know, we had a publisher at that point. And then I went through, in some areas of the book, I'd also given homework. So that made it, that piece is easy. But I went through and every single chapter of the book has pieces in the workbook. So I think the workbook is 27 pages.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And do you hear people actually using it end to end? What are you hearing from your readers? Are they doing it? Are they using it?
Yeah, I am getting some feedback, and even some people that have read the book have said, like, the workbook, the companion workbook really is a necessary part of the book. Hmm. I think you can go through it, but at some point you're going to realize that you need to be, you know, if you're taking notes on another piece of paper, you might as well download the workbook.
Right.
Because I'm asking some questions about, you know, what are your sales superpowers and what are your secret weapons and how do you like to be rewarded and what are you motivated by? Hmm. And those are the really important pieces of information that we're then going to use for me to help you figure out what type of sales role might be right for you.
As a concept, this is very intriguing for me. Not so much intriguing as I think it's so brilliant, because most of the time we talk about ICP and we know the idea of an ICP, but we are not applying it to ourselves when we are looking for a sales job, right?
Yeah, I say it's very funny. We spend all this time figuring out our ICP and our persona and being very targeted in our prospecting and our outreach. And then we're very reactive about our career,
yeah.
i.e. some, you know, a friend calls and says, oh my gosh, I started a, you know, this company, you're going to love it here. You know, a former boss reaches out or a recruiter reaches out.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny that that's what I started to really talk about when I started to write the book is, Why wouldn't we take the same strategy as sales professionals to our career that we're taking with our prospecting efforts?
Absolutely. I think this is brilliant, actually. I mean, like any ideas like these, it takes time to catch on, but I think people should see this very quickly. I do think that people should see the value of this very, very quickly.
Yes.
We do it very loosely. Oh, I'm a hunter, I'm a farmer, and so on and so forth. But you're never really doing it intentionally.
Correct. Yeah, as someone who helps her clients hire sales professionals, I think it's fascinating that no one reaches out to me and says, hey, I know that you're not really looking for somebody right now, but I've done my research. And I know what my ICP is, my ideal company profile. And I think my skill set will be a perfect match for what you're selling in the industry you're selling it in. And you should interview me.
Yeah.
Because that's really what we're doing with prospects, right? We're calling them out of the blue. We're interrupting their day. And we're saying, I've done my research and I think you should be a customer and you should, you know, spend 30 minutes learning more and talking to me about that.
Absolutely.
But we don't do that with our career.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is so strange.
Which is so strange.
Okay, let's dive into the book. The book is ready. Book is out. Let's start with the core concept. Why selling your way in, and what does that really mean?
Yeah, originally the title was Selling Your Way Out, but I'm a power of positive thinking girl, so I thought that was sort of negative. But the concept is, you can use the career in sales to build a life that maybe you don't have today. So originally I was sell your way out of an unfulfilling job and maybe the lifestyle that's not really what you want it to be. But I flipped the script and said, let's do selling your way in to the life that you want. So I truly think the subtitle, the playbook for setting your income and owning your life, really says more than even the selling your way in. I want people to use a career in sales to make the kind of money they want, have the kind of lifestyle they want, have the success that they want. And unlike other professions, I say there are jobs with a set income and jobs where you get to set your own income. And sales is one of those professions where you get to determine your income.
It's so true. And at the same time, we are not intentional about the sales career, right? A lot of people who are there, they are not successful. We all know that 60% of the sales reps are not making quota. The discussion about whether the quota is reasonable or not is a completely different discussion, but we can go there later. how arbitrary the quotas are and how it is destroying the whole sales profession. It's a different thing, but we'll not go there. But the point is that we are not deliberate about investing in ourselves in the sense that we are not becoming experts. We are not staying in touch. We are all reading the Gartner report, but we are not becoming this person who can actually assist the customer and not try to sort of bulldoze in and say, you know, create a FOMO and sell, right? I mean, this is a strange situation, don't you think?
Yeah, and I honestly, you and I can have a beer and discuss this other drama that you've talked about, because I completely agree with you, particularly because I work in the startup space, and I think the venture capital world has caused a lot of those problems by the unrealistic goals that they're setting for companies. But I also think that maybe the reason why sales professionals are only getting to 60% of quota or only 60% are hitting quota is because they're not selling the right thing in the right industry to the right prospect, working for the right company and the right sales leader. If you're not putting yourself in a position to work on your, you know, to use your strengths, your secret weapons, your superpowers, then why would you get to quota?
True. Can't debate that. So before we again move on to the sections of the book, talk a bit about the Christisms that you have put in there and what made you put that in. It's great read, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I had a friend tell me, he said, if you just read the Christisms, you're going to get a lot of information there. For years, I've had these sayings. And I, again, as someone who's a sales trainer, sales coach and consultant, you want things to be memorable.
Yeah.
So I started saying things in a way that was kind of catchy, just so people would remember them and not have, you know, and not have to go back and look at their notes. So I've been collecting Christisms forever. And at some point I started to write them down. And then when we started to write the book, Dixie, my book coach, knew I had Christisms. And she said, we need a chapter of Christisms.
Right. It's really, really great read and very easy to go through and gives a lot, actually. There's a lot of value out there.
Good, thanks.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
I think a lot of people are struggling with self-awareness. So first and foremost, I would say section one is all about you and having self-awareness around what motivates you, how you like to be rewarded, how you like to be led and managed, what your strengths, superpowers, and secret weapons are, in order for you to then, at the end of section one, decide what swim lane you should be in.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it.
Let's talk about the section one where you're talking about the personal plan, how one develops a personal plan and how one has to be intentional about it. And I keep repeating intentional because I think that bit is actually what is missing in a lot of what we do. It's a lot of reactive activity that we do most of the day. Walk us through that section and tell us what do we cover and what would people learn from this section, which is about 9 chapters.
Yep. I think a lot of people are struggling with self-awareness. So first and foremost, I would say section one is all about you and having self-awareness around what motivates you, how you like to be rewarded, how you like to be led and managed, what your strengths, superpowers, and secret weapons are, in order for you to then, at the end of section one, decide what swim lane you should be in. Right. And so one, you know, a while ago, when I went into consulting 8 years ago, I could have done sales training for any level of organization, like sort of sales training, sales coaching, to sell coaching. But somebody said to me, but what do you really want to be known for? And I had been living in the startup world already. And I said, well, I really am passionate about the startup world. I really like how fast paced it is. I like the pressure of being VC backed and those type of things. So she said, so why don't you specialize in that? Why don't you make that your swim lane? And it sounded really scary because I thought, oh my gosh, like the startup world is just a small subset of every company, right? Like it's just this little itty bitty piece of the ecosystem. And what happens if I limit myself and I don't open myself up to the world? Well, I took the leap and the opposite happened. So my ICP knows who I am. The only people I get referred are people that fit my ICP. And I have become known as the startup specialist. And VCs, I guess, got a call, an email this morning from a VC who, when they invest, a lot of times they bring me in to help. And he reached out and said, I've got a new investment and an interesting scenario, and let's have lunch next week and talk about it. So he knows what my specialties are. And so my, you know, 100% of my business for the most part is from referral and has been for, I don't know, 6 or 7 of the 8 years that I've been in business. So I want people to understand that. My brother is in staffing and he's been in staffing for 24 years. And we talk about this all the time because I'm like, no one stays in their company for 24 years. In fact, I would be happy if somebody would stay in the company for 24 months, you know, with the companies that I work in the startup world. And he said, I've spent all this time building relationships with the companies that I'm responsible for placing individuals into. Why on earth would I go into the software world? And he said, this is a relationship business and I know it like the back of my hand. They trust me. You know, in this kind of world, there's not one decided vendor, right? So when somebody decides to post a job, they call lots of recruiting or staffing companies.
Right.
But he feels like he has an edge because he has built that relationship over a number of years. And so we talk about all the time about how the Generation Z or the I call them the Zillennials. I put the Z's and the Millennials together. They don't appreciate that. But, you know, are like 24 months is like a lifetime.
True.
And I thought, you know, when candidates ask me, like, what is it going to take to be successful here? I normally interrupt the sales leader and say, you need to stay for 3 years. Because you put all of this work in those 24 months. And on month 25 is when the phone starts to ring. Because in the sales world, there are so many what I call NRNs, not right nows. And over time, if you talk to enough people and you have enough discovery calls, and even if people don't go in the pipeline or they're closed as lost, those are all not right nows. If you stick around, you'll get that call back. The phone will eventually ring and you won't have to pick it up and dial out. But nobody wants to put the work in and stay long enough to reap the rewards of all the efforts that they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, couldn't agree more. So would you have a story of someone who figured out their superpowers and special talents that they have, something illustrative of this point?
I had an employee back in the day when I was a W-2 sales leader. Her name is Ashley. And Ashley understood how powerful like organization and structure is. We were in a SaaS situation selling into education. So private schools and public schools in the K-12 market. And she was doing a really great job. So I started sending her out to conferences, letting her do trade shows. And she would come back and she was all jazz and her eyes were big and she loved it. And she eventually came to me and said, I think I need to be in outside sales. And she went and worked for FedEx and she was with them a long, long time. And, you know, she'd been in inside sales probably 3 or 4 years and doing really well. Like she was hitting quotas. She was one of my top performers. But once she got out and realized the impact she could have in a face-to-face situation, I was proud of her for realizing that inside sales was her stepping stone to outside sales. And she's become a very successful outside sales rep.
Wonderful. Wonderful. When you talk about choose your swim lane, what exactly is it about finding who you are or is it something else? So I'm intrigued.
Yeah. Yeah. The swim lane is actually kind of your sales role. So all of these other things. So understanding yourself well enough to know I need to be selling a product versus a service. I need to be selling into the mid-market versus SMB versus enterprise. I need to be in a smaller company or a larger company. Like I don't mind being with a Fortune 500, or I need to be in a company with fewer than 500 employees. because I need, you know, that type of attention. I need to feel like I'm an important part of the mission. I need to understand my mission. So the swim lane is really making that decision, just like I did with deciding to be a startup sales consultant, which is, what are all those pieces put together? Like, what should you be selling? What market should you be selling into? What size company? What kind of leader do you want to work for? What kind of industry do you want to be in? And then putting all that together becomes your swim lane.
Right, right. And then you go on to, in the next chapter, you're talking about developing your secret weapon strategy, right?
Yeah, so the second section really is about when you go into a company, God willing, but that isn't always the case because I work in the startup world, but God willing, they have some sort of a formal sales processes, right?
Right.
The prospecting process, negotiation, how do we work the sales stages, those types of things. But you need to be able, that's why that knowing yourself piece is so important.
Hmm.
Because you need to then take that and personalize it, customize it, tailor it so that it works for your specialties, right? So what is, you know, how do you play to your, if your superpower, let's just say, is coming to a win-win in a negotiation situation, well, then you're going to want to put yourself in a situation where you're going to run into a negotiation more frequently than not, right? Some people can't stand the negotiation piece.
Hmm.
But if that's your secret weapon, then you probably need to be selling a more complex product, you know, that's maybe a six-figure deal. It may take 9 to 12 months to close. Like, you need a more complex situation because you like that. Your secret weapon is being able to take the negotiation situation, make it work for everyone, and close the deal. So those are the kind of things that you really need to understand.
Is this a gut thing that this is what I like? So this is what, so it may not be that something I like is something I'm good at, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So it's not a gut thing. Here are some of the questions that when I take people, I actually do a workshop on identifying and leveraging your secret power, your superpower. So here are some of the questions. Like, what do people come and ask me advice about? What are the things that other people think that I do well? What am I passionate about? What comes easy for me, but is hard for other people? Other people seem to struggle with it. What do I love just doing? What do I naturally gravitate to, even outside of the professional world? So if you're not sure what your superpower is, others around you do.
Right.
Right. But if you stop to really think about it, like, my universal superpower, I have a sales superpower, but my universal superpower is generosity. My motto is I have 30 minutes for everyone. And I am a very level-headed person. I always say, in case of emergency, my name and phone number should be on everyone's in case of emergency line on their paperwork. Because I just go into problem-solving firefighter mode and I make sure that everything happens that needs to happen and I don't let my emotions get in the way.
Hmm.
But if I go back in time and I think about it, when I was a teenager, I was the person that all of my friends came to problem solve. And I affectionately called it Cry with Christy. And I would say the phone lines are open every night between 7 and 8. You know, remember the late night call-in shows where you could call in for advice about your love life? Dear Abby or whatever. That was me. So, you know, if they'd gotten a bad grade on a test and they didn't want to tell their parents, or they'd had a fight with their boyfriend, or their parents had grounded them for sneaking out the second floor window to go to a party, I got those calls, right? Like, and they were, you know, they wanted a little like shoulder to cry on, but they also wanted proactive action items that they should be taking. Like, how should I tell my parents that I got a D on a test that, you know, I'm averaging a B plus in the class?
Hmm.
So if you go back, I'm like, generosity has been a superpower of mine. But back then I never saw it that way.
Sure.
I saw it as like, this is who I am.
Hmm.
But when you think back on it now, I'm like, oh, well, like, people knew I would make time for them. I've always made time for the people closest to me.
Yeah.
So like, you know, firefighting is a superpower. And by the way, you don't have just one. So generosity is a superpower. My sales superpower is firefighting and problem solving. So when we have a deal that's stalled, reps come to me because I can help work through like how we're going to get through this and get this thing closed. So I'm a puzzle piece girl. I like to move things around until we get everything to fit.
This is such a great story. And before we move on to the last section, you're talking about, you know, figuring out your own unique value proposition. Is it something mm-hmm. that leads from this discussion we just had?
Yeah, it really does. And if you take that, then you need to make sure, like, let's just say you're interviewing for a job and you know that, you know, let's just stick with negotiations as your superpower. You need to be asking interview questions that let you know whether or not you're going to be able to leverage your superpower at this new job with their sales process. And that's when I talk about people taking the wrong sales job, because sometimes I don't think they're asking the right questions in the interview in order to figure out whether or not they can leverage their superpowers in this situation. Mm-hmm. And so once you get in there, if the answer is yes, like there's, you know, 50% of our deals are negotiated and, you know, we would let you do that with some support. Then when you get in there, you need to know that you got to get deals far enough down the pike in order to get to the negotiation piece, because that's when the the definition of leveraging something is putting yourself in a position to change or influence the outcome.
Right.
So if the deal never gets to, you know, if your deal never gets to negotiation or there's no negotiation, like the price is the price, like you would never want to work for a company where they say, oh yeah, we don't negotiate. Like the price is the price. Well, that's not a good fit for you.
Yeah.
Even if you like the product that they're selling or the service that they're selling, it doesn't matter. You can't leverage your superpower under that circumstance.
Right. Absolutely. So this gives us a segue to move into the section 3 and the chapter on choosing your three things, the formula you have been waiting for, right? So this sort of leads into that. So tell us a bit about this choosing your three things idea.
Yeah. So you need to make sure that you understand what the things are going to be that are going to go into this. And I have a pretty strong athletic background, so it would have been remiss for me, and I would not have been happy with the book had I not put in there a section about the mental side of sales.
Yeah.
So I say it's the spiritual, physical, and mental side of sales that separates the top 10% from the other 90. Mm-hmm. And if you've done all the other work up until now, like you know your superpower and your secret weapons, you put yourself in the right place. This is where I say the work to get to the top doesn't actually happen at work. It happens outside of work. And I ask this one interview question with every candidate that I interview, so you can be prepared for this. I ask them, what are the three things that you do consistently, regardless of the job that you're in or the company that you're working for, that you truly believe intuitively or in your heart that if I do these three things, I should be able to be successful? Mm-hmm. And top 10%ers say things like, I start my day at the gym at 6 a.m. I make sure I get 8 hours of sleep. I have a religious or spiritual practice. I put my phone down for 2 hours a day so I can be present with my family. I have a tight circle and I use them as an advisory board. You know, I'm conscious about what I put in my body. And if you look at top performers across any category, these type of things are always present for them. And like, I'm a cardio junkie. I belong to Orange Theory only because I would never lift a free weight unless I went to class two times a week. But I know I can tell when I haven't had enough cardio. It impacts every part of my life, personally and professionally. I'm just not as sharp. I'm more tired. There's a lot, and honestly, I'm crabby. I'm not the nicest person to be around when I haven't had my cardio. Mm-hmm. But having grown up as an athlete, I understood the transition between taking all of the things I learned about visualization, positive self-talk, affirmations, and I just moved that into my professional life. It seemed like a very natural thing to do. It didn't seem like I was bucketed in just something I did when I played racquetball or tennis or golf, those type of things. So I think people don't understand the importance of the things that happen outside of work and how you live your life outside of the 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, how much impact it has on your ability to be successful during the week.
Fascinating. And as you're saying, and I'm thinking that this, I think you mentioned also, that this applies to everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're the CEO or the salesperson, right? I mean, these...
That's correct.
They are quite universal in nature, and it is not linked to any specific role.
No, I mean, the habits of top performers are just the habits of top performers, no matter what industry you're in. But you know, if you do some research on Fortune 500 CEOs, well over 80% of them start their day in the gym.
Absolutely. Makes sense. What are you talking of when you talk about knowing yourself? So this is sort of a spiritual inner journey, right? Mm-hmm. And what is your, for the lack of a better word, what is your prescription to get there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a quiet time that you need to have with yourself. So, you know, do you, you know, what's your risk tolerance? That's an easy one, right? Like, not everybody's risk tolerance is high enough to work for a VC-backed startup.
Yeah.
Right? The majority of startups fail. Or, you know, or they get sold, you know, or acquired or moved into a portfolio. So you have to kind of understand all kinds of aspects about things that you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with. You know, are you comfortable working remotely? Do you need to work in a hybrid environment? Do you need to be in the office full time? My son went through the college during the pandemic and hated every minute of it. He actually took a semester off. He said, I can't do this online school thing. He was someone who knew himself well enough to know that he needed to be in a classroom setting in order to perform well and get the material. Interestingly enough, his first job out of college was a hybrid role here in St. Louis. So 3 days in the office, 2 days at home. He's in the office 5 days a week. He understood himself well enough to know that he just wasn't going to do the at home work thing well. Yeah. You know, a lot of people won't take a job that's not 100% remote.
Yeah.
But he knew himself well enough to know that I won't perform well. I like to be around people and my coworkers. I don't like the isolation. You know, he lives alone. Yeah. He doesn't want to be alone all day long. That's 24 hours a day alone, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I think it's all of those. It's all these little things that you're not thinking about. Like, you know, do you need to be in an office environment? Yeah. Do you need to be, you know, remote at home? Do you want to sell a product or a service? Do you want to sell, you know, a widget? Do you want to sell something physical? Do you want to be able to get out and meet your clients? Do you want to be, you know, some of the jobs in sales that people don't even think about are implementation or onboarding specialist, technical specialist. Like, you know, a lot of times I interview candidates and I go, you're very technical. Have you thought about sales engineer or solution consultant? And a lot of times they go, I don't even know what you're talking about. And so that's frustrating to me that people don't understand even all the options. So how on earth could they pick the right job for them when they don't even know what all the options are? So I spend a lot of time in the book kind of outlining all of the different sales jobs that are out there, everything from selling insurance or real estate, you know, 100%, you know, commission job, to the opposite, right? To potentially being a customer success or account manager where maybe it's a 75% base and 25% bonus. So, you know, you have to really understand all of those things. How do you like to be rewarded? Are you collaborative or are you a lone wolf? Right? Do you want to be in a team? You could be in a team selling situation. If you're selling a six-figure deal, it's probably a team selling situation where you're going to need a sales engineer, a solution consultant, finance is going to have to get involved. Or you're like, and just leave me alone and let me sell.
Right.
But it's all of those things that I don't think anybody spends time thinking about, which to your point earlier in our conversation is why the workbook is so important. Because I'm going to force you to write down answers to all of those types of questions.
Wonderful. Would you like to tell us a story to wrap up this conversation about a company which was, or a person, either way, which was not doing very well and they sort of applied this thought process and did turn around their life and their career?
Yeah, I actually speak about this in the book. So back probably in 2005, I had an employee who ended up having dyslexia. Got through the interview process and I made an assessment and he'd asked if he could take it at home instead of in the office. And I was like, that's kind of outside the rules, but he came from a referral from someone I trusted and knew, so I let him do it. It wasn't until he literally landed in the office, you know, that about 3 or 4 days in, he approached me and said, would you be willing to buy a software program for me called Dragon Naturally Speaking? I'd never heard of it. I had no idea. And I said, well, maybe. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And he said, it'll allow me to dictate my notes and then we'll go straight into the CRM system. It'll allow me to do the same for emails. And I said, okay, like, it sounds like an efficiency tool. This was before, you know, all of the automation efficiency tools existed. This was a long time ago. And finally I said, but I don't understand why you would need that. And that's when he told me he had dyslexia. And I just was like, wow. I sat back in my chair and I'm like, James, I had no idea. Like, how on earth, you know, we just started my company, but he'd been successful other places. And he told me the story. I mean, he had dyslexia so severely that he had to have a proctor in college. So he had someone who went to class with him and he would be able to take tests privately with her and he would, she would read the questions and he would verbally give the answers, right? So, I mean, this was a very severe disability. And I said, how on earth did you get through all this? And he said, I had to learn to be strong in other areas. And I said, okay, well, maybe I know those, but humor me. Yeah. And he said, I'm funny. I'm charismatic. I'm a, you know, like I make, you know, I try hard. I'm a people pleaser. I try to make sure people like me. He goes, I was, you know, I would have to, before I figured out that I was dyslexic, I had to deflect. When a teacher would ask me a question or ask me to come to the, you know, come to the front of the class and the chalkboard and write down the answer, he goes, I had to become the class clown and deflect because I wasn't able to do that. And I didn't know why at the time, but then I figured it out. And he said, and so all of the things that were perfect traits for sales, you know, he took this huge disadvantage, which could have put him in a completely different situation in life, but figured out what his superpowers were that really had nothing to do with academics or academia, and build on all of these other strengths in order to overcome the fact that he was not going to be the guy, no one was going to come to him and ask them to write his term paper.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Wonderful. This is a great story. Great point to sort of wrap this up. But I would love to come back, and there are some things we raised, and I think there is a second book on the way. So we will be in touch, and we will be talking more. Christy, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about your book. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. Please go get your copy of Selling Your Way In, my shameless plug here.
So thank you again. Have a wonderful day and talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me on and the thoughtful conversation.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.